gusts of mist and fog around, certainly through the morning, and it could linger until mid-morning, some of that particularly in the sheltered Scottish glens, perhaps through the Vale of York and across Northern Ireland. But lots of sunshine to come here through the day, with the exception of the Northern and Western Isles, which will have a little more cloud. With just a light southwesterly breeze, highs of 10 to 12 should feel distinctly spring-like.
Thank you, Susan. This is BBC Radio 4, where now it's time for our Book of the Week. In his travel memoir, Gideon Lewis Krause describes suffering from a lack of purpose, intensified no doubt by his father's departure from the family home and the author's later move to Berlin, where it's all partying and little else. He needs to shape up, find something. And won't this happen on foot, on a series of pilgrimages? We'll find out in A Sense of Direction.
My friend Tom had moved to Tallinn with the idea that the constraint of its distance and exoticism would force him to focus on the work he'd been neglecting. I'd moved to Berlin on a freelancer's visa, precisely for its lack of constraint, hoping that its sense of vast possibility would help me figure out what I wanted. Tom picked me up at the tiny airport in a taxi. And what I chiefly remember about the four-day jag that followed is waking up in my bed and realizing that I was back in Berlin. I had vague recollections of spending an evening in the company of some Siberian dancers. The only other clue was a page in my little notebook where I'd managed one note in 4 days. Camino de Santiago. Sense of Purpose. June 10th. I'd underlined purpose. This Camino business sounded vaguely familiar. The internet reported that in the year AD 813, the alleged bones of the apostle St. James the Greater were unearthed in Santiago de Compostela in far northwestern Spain. St. James had supposedly evangelized as far afield as Galicia before he was martyred in first century Palestine. His relics were said to have arrived at the Atlantic coast, then the presumed end of the world, in a stone boat where they remained buried under a hermitage until their discovery 8 centuries later. A pilgrimage to the site started up within the next 100 years, and since that time the Camino de Compostela has seen a more or less continuous parade of redemptive aspiration. Over the past 20 years, the pilgrimage has become popular with a secular crowd. The book Tom had moved to Estonia to work on was a record of his visits to the far-flung tombs of the apostles. And by the time I was done reading up on the Camino, I'd retrieved a faint memory of Tom's having said he planned to spend the following summer strolling across Spain, starting on the French side of the Pyrenean border. I didn't know what to make of my June 10th note, though, so I called him up on Skype. So, Tom, what's going on June 10th? That's the day we start, he said. The day we start what, Tom? Our walk across Spain. You don't remember? Strolling through hills by night, just you and me and the long path ahead? You had that whole rousing speech about how we'd wake up each morning full of the simple, broad purpose of moving forward. You pounded your fist on the table. A few Estonians even clapped. And then we promised some girls we'd send them postcards from Santiago. I had moved to Berlin as a kind of preemptive strike, reasoning that if I bolted while I could, in my late 20s, I wouldn't bolt when I couldn't, in my 40s. Or more specifically, at 46, when my dad left his marriage and moved in with Brett, lovely guy he'd met at the gym. My younger brother, Micah, and I could never get in touch with him about baseball games because the two of them were always disappearing to the nightclubs of Palm Springs. Berlin was an experiment in total freedom from authority. I was always doing just what I felt like. It went swimmingly at night. There were gallery openings and bars and clubs, all elbowy with asymmetrical people, proving provocative until breakfast. The daytimes were another matter. Then it was less clear what the most memorable experience might be. For a while, just being there felt glorious. Drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes felt like sufficient acts. For the few minutes one lasted, you knew exactly what you were doing. You were smoking that cigarette. When it was done, you would figure out what to do next, or you would just light another. "I think I'm having a crisis," I said to my friend David Levine, a conceptual artist, as we walked to his after party. David fished a cigarette out of his pocket and lit it for me. "Of course you're having a crisis. You have no idea what you want to do. The only thing that allows us any relief is what we tend to call purpose, or what I think about in terms of direction." It was after this chat that I felt perhaps just moving with direction would make me more decisive, waking up each day knowing I'd committed myself to spending daylight walking as far as I could towards Santiago de Compostela. It's just after 6 a.m. on the 10th of June when Tom and I follow our first yellow arrow. Manic Berlin feels inconceivably distant, but Santiago does as well. A deep fog ahead of us obscures the looming mountains. For the next 800 kilometers, we will join fellow pilgrims in the ritual of rueing the misery of the first day, the 7 or 9 or 11 hours of unbroken uphill. But in the end, they would always smile and say, it was all worth it for those spectacular views. Our view is a 360-degree panorama of freezing, fluffed, velvet fog. John Brearley's A Pilgrim's Guide to the Camino de Santiago, a practical and mystical manual for the modern-day pilgrim, warns against attempting the first day's mountain path in inclement weather. But we just shrug and shoulder our packs and charge ahead into the frozen mist. We don't see ourselves as the sort of pilgrims who worry about a little weather. We also don't see ourselves, as we set out, as the sort of pilgrims whom other pilgrims make a habit of passing. But it's a self-image we're quickly encouraged to revise. We see almost nobody else in the fog, but over the first hour or two, other pilgrims waltz right by, offering cheery greetings of Buen Camino as they hurry along. Tom narrows his eyes. "This is not a race," he says. For practicing Catholics, the reward for arrival in Santiago is a full plenary indulgence. The rest of us are cagey about what to expect. Tom has found the woman he wants to spend the rest of his life with, and he looks at this as a chance to walk himself into the tranquility he needs to inhabit a stable life, shaped by romantic commitment. My reasons for being here have more to do with the freedom I'm trying to escape, I think, than the stillness I'm hoping to find. Tom and I seek solace in our most obvious brief as writers. Documentation. Tom looks down at the muddy path and says he's going to describe the sheep droppings as black scarabs of shit. He stops to write that down, and in his little black notebook, it's already late morning and I've taken no notes yet, so I stop too, to write down that Tom is pleased with himself. I've got the same little black notebook. We're climbing what, if we could see more than 7 feet ahead, would be identifiable as a sheer rock face. Tom develops his fourth blister, and I take his heavy pack for a while. We achieve the pass after about 9 hours, which, according to the insulting signage, ought to have taken about 5. We're finally above the clouds and can see the loping green hills of the Basque Country below us. We nap briefly in the sun before heading down to the pilgrim's hostel. The albergue at Roncesvalles is a converted chapel, a high and severe vessel of chill gray stone with a few hundred bunk beds in an aisled grid. There's soft chant playing and a sanctimonious but not unwelcome air of reflection. We wake at 6 as pilgrims leap from their bunks. The first day total about 25 kilometers, which is what you have to average if you want to finish in a month. We looked to the Brearley to see how many kilometers he recommends for today. It took us only a few hours to loathe John Brearley and his mystical manual. The book has maps and practical information for each stage, but it's also a compendium of treacly meditations on the spiritual renewal this walk is supposed to inspire. He weeps constantly about bragging. He also brags constantly about weeping. The path is cut between the bald foothills of the Pyrenees on our right and some lowland pastures on our left. We follow the yellow arrows down a rocky hillside through stately conifers. The sunlight splashes cool and messy on the path, and Tom stops and takes out his notebook. "I love this," I say. "I want to do the Camino again." "Gideon," Tom says, "we are 2 hours into our second day." Later, we stop and sit in a ramshackle barn above a river, and Tom takes off his boots. His right upper heel is more blister than foot. "Each day," he says, "has been a different path toward extraordinary pain." "Tom," I say, "we are 5 hours into our second day." Our day off in Pamplona, Tom notes, is an emergency vacation from the Camino, which itself is a specific vacation from the general vacation that is our lives. Tom talks to his girlfriend on the phone, and I kill time at an internet cafe, writing my first email dispatch about the walk. There's one from my grandfather, Max, telling me he's following us on a map. We wake up at 5:30 the next morning in our comfortable boutique hotel, with a sense of shame and urgency. We wait around for the desk officials to stamp our pilgrim's credenciales, the little passport that proves to the Compostela authorities that we made the journey on foot, and take up once more the trail of yellow arrows which channel us out of Pamplona through the gates of the old city. A light rain falls, but it feels great to be walking again. We come over a final rise and see half of the small province of La Rioja spread out before us in a shallow basin, ringed with craggy recumbent mountains tinged a deep Andean green. Low cliffs of red soil hang over the vineyards, vineyards that produce the famous red wines the Spanish love to refrigerate for Tom to drink with breakfast. We stop and breathe. The next stretch is the most beautiful landscape of the whole Camino. Careful cultivation, alternating fields of hay, vineyard, stubbled fallow, counterpaned yellowing greens and greening blues. From the heights, the land below us looks like a sea of inconstant depth, a mossy blur of lime and pea and jade. It is only a couple of days later that we charge up the hills, the Montes de Oca, and there's nothing to talk about but how strong our legs feel, and how we're finally used to this.
Patrick Kennedy was reading from A Sense of Direction by Gideon Lewis Krauss, which has been abridged for radio by Catherine Williams. The producer is Duncan Minchell. Tomorrow, the Camino journey continues, and what will happen when you reach the end of the trail? That's at the same time here on BBC Radio 4. This is BBC Radio 4. It's 12 minutes to 1. Now here's the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 today, Tuesday the 11th of March. There are warnings of gales in Trafalgar, Rockall, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. High Irish Sea, 1033, expected 40s, 1038, by 1800 Tuesday. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Utsira. Southerly or southwesterly, 4 or 5, occasionally 6 in the far north. Fair, moderate or good. South Utsira. Westerly or northwesterly, 3 or 4, occasionally 5 in the far southeast. Fair, good. East 40s. Variable becoming southwesterly 3 or 4,